Kevin Foster, side six. Kevin Foster, side six. Yep.
Yeah, so you'd go in there for the... If you want to go with one of the Nayas, you had to go at the chief court, we'll get a chit off him from behind the bar. You went up the one, the woman who you were going to go with.
Do you have a choice?
Well, you had a choice of eight.
A choice of eight, right.
So,
how much was the ticket?
It was 1,500 Djiboutian francs.
Which is?
About 25 quid, I think it was.
25 quid, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you were paid 180,000, something like that. So it wasn't really a great deal.
Huh.
You'd have 1,500 for one pass, which was a couple of 15 minutes. Or 3,000 for two passes, half an hour. Or 3,000 for all night in. But if you stayed there all night, you weren't allowed to go with any of the Nayas until everybody else had finished. So you went there, you got yourself... You always got a meal at the night time. And then you slept the night there.
And what about the... was there a bar in there? Or how did
yeah, there was a bar there as well. It was like, and that bar was open until midnight. So you go to your main bar in the camp till 9:30. When that finished, what would happen is the brothel was always closed till 10 o'clock at night. It was open from 7 till 8, then it would close at 8 because the cinema was open. So the Nayas were allowed to watch the film, whatever it was. And at 10 o'clock, when the film finished, everybody would pile off down to the brothel.
And the bar would be shut.
The camp bar would be shut, but the brothel bar would be open.
And what nationality were the girls?
Somalian or Ethiopian.
Mm. Not local.
Well, Djibouti is not really...
Right, okay. Yeah, there's not much of a population. No. And were they... Do they speak English or French?
French.
Yeah.
Now and again, you had a couple of Somalians or Ethiopians who spoke English.
Mm. Were any of them... were they educated or no?
No, not really.
Mm. And was there a high incidence of clap or...?
The thing is, you had to see the medic before you went in there. If your name was in the book, you just wasted 1,500.
They had a medical orderly there all the time, on duty.
On duty at the brothel.
Right.
And he'd have his books with him to make sure that anybody who had to clap didn't go through the doors. Mm. Now, say a Legionnaire Court had a clap out in town, because all the bars are like brothels anyway. And C Court, like, for instance, there's one Legionnaire called Syphilis out there. And what he had to do was go down to the bar with the police and the medical officer and the local police down to this bar, pointing out the woman he'd been with. She was given a medical examination, and when they found she had syphilis, she was given 9 month imprisonment. Because a lot of the bars there, the women there in the bars have to have medical tests as well. It's like the military run the bars.
Really? Mm. They've supervised, are they? Military supervised?
No, it's not so much military, it's medical wise.
Right.
The bars, it's up to the owners to do what they want in the bars, but the girls are going to be... have medical checks. That's once a week.
And so the barkeeper wasn't prosecuted?
No, he wasn't. It was just the girl who was there.
And for getting infected, I mean, what sort of... was there a punishment for that?
No, there wasn't really a punishment in the Legion for this.
Mm.
I mean, say when we came back from Djibouti after 2 years was up, you have to have a medical when you come back from Djibouti, and they test you for everything. And there was one bloke in our lot, he had syphilis. And his leave was cancelled. He wasn't allowed to go on leave until he was cleaned up.
Mm.
So they're pretty strict in that in the Legion.
Yeah. But it's not like it used to be a self-inflicted injury.
That's right, yeah.
British Army, British Forces. And how did that system operate in Corsica?
It didn't really. There wasn't a brothel in the camp there.
Right.
I think there's only two regiments now. That's the 13th Vibili and Trois Mary in French Guiana.
Mm.
I think there are only two regiments with a brothel now.
What about Aubagne? Yeah, Aubagne.
No, there's nothing like that there.
No. So, what were your duties, etc.?
Well, we did a course on sabotage. That would have been the August '85, and then it was just patrols, endless border patrols, Ethiopia and Somalia. We actually did a patrol one time. It took a month and a half. We actually marched the entire border of Djibouti from Ali Sabia down towards Somalia, right up towards Tadjoura and Obok.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up down there in Ethiopia.
Did you learn anything? What did you learn about sabotage or demolitions that didn't expect to learn or found it interesting?
It was a good course. It was a lot of booby traps, but a lot of it was initiative. Make your own booby traps. Design your own type things. It was part of the course was you had to design your own booby trap.
Right.
And then you'd have to do you'd have all these old wrecks of tanks and things out in the desert. Right. And the instructor would go up with a bit of chalk and draw a square on the side of the tank and say, right, blow that square out. Not a big hole. I want the square where I've put the mark. Right. And it was learning how to work out your calculations for yourself with explosives rather than look at a book.
Right. Did they do anything about infiltration sabotage?
That's yeah, we did all that as well. We had to do attacks on that, the encampment things, getting past the guards and things.
Really? Mm. Was that difficult, laying up and so forth?
But the thing was, if you're doing an attack in a camp, they knew you were coming, right. So they'd make it healthier. But a couple of times the lads got caught, but most times we actually got in and out, with the charges.
Okay. And what were they, and did they have riots and so forth in Djibouti at that time?
No, there was nothing at all.
Okay, so you, what did you get leaves out there, or how did that happen?
I got a leave twice out there. I mean, it wasn't anywhere you could go to. Hmm. We stayed in the Sheraton Hotel in Djibouti. And was allowed to wear civvy clothes as well.
Right.
And I did 13 days the first time.
So what did you do? Just had drinks lazed about?
Just lazed around all day.
Hmm. Was there a beach?
Yeah, beaches all over the place. Yeah. Corumbaro, Dorali.
Were they resort beaches?
You couldn't really call them a resort in Djibouti.
No. But could you swim nicely?
No, you could swim there, no problem. Not off right in the Red Sea.
Yeah. Was it safe swimming?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what about stonefish and sharks and...
Yeah, I mean...
Undertows and...
Yeah, I mean, off Djibouti, you had a place called Fardagube. Mm-hmm. And that was where Jacques Cousteau actually lost one of his sons up there. And it's like a crater under the water, under the sea. And... A lot of the Legion divers, well, a lot of people, they go round it rather than go over it. Because when Jacques Cousteau was there, they loaded a cage down with a dead camel in it, and the cage was mangled to bits. So one of his sons volunteered to go down with the camera to film what was down there. And when they hoisted that cage up, that was all smashed, his son was gone. And he actually got the foot, but they had the camera. Now, what we was told was, when Jacques Cousteau dies, he's going to publish a book with all these pictures of some of the things that he's filmed. That had never been seen before.
Yeah. And what you're saying, whatever was down there, didn't bear thinking about. Or
no, some beastie down there. They reckon it's a centuries oldest thing. But that's in the Fardagube. And actually, people sort of circle around it rather than go over the top of this crater.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So that was swimming in that. And what other events were there during your 13D BLE?
Just patrols, endless boredom patrols.
Right.
Across the desert.
And you spent all your time in that third
company.
Company.
First section.
Punishment.
Yeah.
How did that vary from the people that weren't on punishment?
They had a cushy, basically. They didn't do the patrols. Every time a patrol came up, it was the third company that had to go out and
right.
do it.
Okay, so they got the sort of dirty... They were the duties and...
Yeah.
Yeah, dirty duties. So you then got posted... Or you had chance to go elsewhere?
I would...
Where was your next posting?
For an engineer regiment.
All right, but what about Chad?
Right, well, what had happened was I came up from Djibouti. I went on leave for 72 days. And that time
Where did you go?
I came out of England.
Were you allowed to?
I wasn't allowed to.
But you did.
And when I was on leave, I got pulled in by the Navy for desertion.
Now explain all this. You shouldn't have gone back to England.
That's right. So, I'd came back anyway. I went to my brother's house in Portsmouth, because he was still in the Navy.
What year was this then?
This was 87. I came back. And I had 2 weeks of my leave left when I got pulled in by the Navy. I was putting detention quarters again.
Right. How did you get out of France? Because they presumed you got all your...
I just got a flight from Charlie Gould Airport.
Didn't they bother to look at your papers?
Just showed me ID card and my leave pass. The gendarmes on the airport were quite used to legionnaires going back and forwards as long as they had a valid leave pass in the hand.
But you shouldn't have been leaving France.
No, I'd actually put down an address in Lille in France where I was going for... Lyon. I told them I was going on leave to Lyon.
All right, so you went from Djibouti to Charles de Gaulle.
No, I went from Djibouti, flew back to Charles de Gaulle, I went to Auban.
Yeah.
We had to stay there for Auban for 2 weeks for the Cameroon.
Yeah.
And as soon as the Cameroon was finished, we was allowed to go and leave.
Right. And then what? Then you just got a train or whatever it was to Charles de Gaulle?
We got a train to Paris from Marseille.
Yeah.
Then went to London, flew to London, stayed there.
How did you land in England without a passport?
Well, I was lucky. One of the lads I was with, Terry McEwen, who used to work for British Airways, and as I was coming through the passport control, Terry says, don't go through this one, go to that one over there, I know him. So he started chatting with the bloke on the desk, and he says, oh, these are my two mates, we're in the Legion, like, when got that passport, got our ID cards, and he went, yeah, all right, lads, get yourself through. So we got waved straight through.
So what then happened? So what... wait one. Okay. This mic's just come out. You went home, Newcastle.
No, I went to Portsmouth. I went to London first with Terry's brother. Now, there's three working together. Jock Sanders was another one. Then went on the Saturday. This was on the Friday we got there. On the Saturday, went to London to buy some postcards to send to the lads over in Djibouti. Send a couple to the captain and the colonel and whatever.
To wind them up?
Yeah.
Do they mind that, or?
No.
If they'd found out that you were in England...
Well, they actually had postcards. The postcard we sent to the company captain was a guard outside of Buckingham Palace. With two punk rockers with their fingers up, middle fingers up.
Right.
And it had greetings from London written on the postcard. So I think they had a good idea where we were.
But would they have punished you for that?
No, I spoke to Jean-Louis Lemay about 5 months later. And he said, I got your postcard from Djibouti. Mm. He says, I've still got it now. He says, thanks very much.
Oh.
The postcard from London, sorry.
Right. So what happened there? So what happened then?
I did a bit of touring. I went to Portsmouth. I went up to Northern Ireland with Terry's house. I went to Birmingham with my mother.
I know, how was it, the troubles were a bit calmer then, were they at that time? Or?
Well, at the time I went to Northern Ireland, Teddy lived in Northern Ireland.
Mm.
So I got asked, when I got through went to Belfast Harbour, this is away, and I said, oh, my name's Ferguson. I'm in the Foreign Legion, I said, I'm staying with him. And they did a check on us and all this, and nothing came up, because like Ferguson didn't exist. And then I says, okay, fair enough. And then... stayed there for 10 days and then flew back. I had no problems at all.
Right, so then what happened?
Then I went down to Portsmouth again. I went up the North East, sorry, for a while, 2 weeks.
Yeah, how did they catch, what I'm saying is, how did they catch up?
Yeah, then I went up to Portsmouth to my brother's house. And while I was there, I sat there, a lot of people in the Navy knew me, and they knew my brother as well at the same time. And some officers said to my brother, how is your brother getting on the Foreign Legion these days?
Says.
And Jim says, oh, he's getting on quite well. He's been saving a lot of money and sending it back to me, and I've been banking for him. Now, while I was at his house, I said to his wife, phone Jim up at work and tell him I need some money from the bank when he comes back, because he was going to get into this bank account. So I just have this officer answered the phone.
And you here you are.
And he says, my brother's wife says, can you give him a message? And he said, what? And she said, tell me his brother wants some money out the bank and bring it home with him. So he obviously put two and two together and realised I was back in England and called the Naval Patrol round.
So what happened then?
So I had two SIB petty officers and a policeman. So a policeman came round the house.
Uniform?
Yeah, the SIB were in civvies, but the policeman was in uniform.
Was he an ordinary constable? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they took us up to Nelson Barracks.
Had
a chat there. Put us in the nick for the night. Took us up the next day. Then it was going back and forwards, asking us questions. Then I finally went in front of the Admiral, and he said, why did he desert?
You had an interview with the Admiral?
No, I was actually up in front of his table,
yes.
With all his officers in the background.
Yes.
So I told him why I deserted, about the thieving going on, about this bloke, tea leaving and all this. And I says, and basically, I says, if I had ever stayed, I would have been sued, went to court and all this, like. And the Admiral said, well, is there any way we can check up on this? And some officer said, yeah, we can call up records in Centurion. And the Admiral said, well, how long will that take? And he said, 15 minutes. So the Admiral says, right, stand down period, 30 minutes. 30 minutes later, I was recalled back in again.
And were you in naval uniform?
I was.
How do you feel about that then?
I was in work stress.
Yeah, but I mean, you must have been a bit of a bloody shock.
Yeah, I was. It wasn't any real problem to us.
Really?
Because that's...
Shock of capture? No?
No, that... The actual time I was spent in the nick was waiting for me charges coming through.
Yeah.
All I was doing was ironing these uniforms.
But you must have been a great shock when the shore patrol came round.
No, because at the time I was sitting there playing my brother's computer, and I heard my sister-in-law at the door talking to them, and she was trying to bluff her way out of it, and I heard them asking for me. So I just got up and I says, are you looking for me then, are you? And they said, yeah.
What was their attitude?
I think they were more shocked than I was, because I'd actually looked at the back window and seen this clown at the back with a red and green rugby shirt on. And the kids were laughing at him. And I thought, who's that idiot out there? And he was trying to hide behind the garage. And it wasn't until these two come at the door, suddenly he clicked, and I went, oh, I says, you better get your mate as well. And this SIB bloke says, well, who's that? I says, you know, your mate at the back there with the red and green rugby shirt on. And he went, oh, yeah, I'll go and get him.
What was their attitude to you?
Well, I think they was more shocked than me. They must have thought it was either run out of the back door. Right. That's what, obviously why this idiot was out there. But they were just chatting away with us.
Really?
And they weren't too bothered.
And so you were up before the Admiral for 30-minute recess or whatever. What happened then?
I got called back in again, and the Admiral said, right, he says, we'll phone up some tuning records about the character. And he says, it's right, what you said is true. He did get, because I was told later on that a year after he deserted, he got caught thieving and kicked out the Navy. Mm-hmm. And they checked the records and says, yes, it was right. He was a thief. He was kicked out the Navy. And the Admiral says, well, he says, in a way, you did the right thing by deserting. He says, because if you had stayed in the Navy and you had been sued by the courts, you'd have probably been given 28 days of detention quarters and kicked out the Navy. He says, well, you're back here now. He says, no, I'm not prepared to give you any punishment. He says, because I think you've suffered enough as it is. Being in the Legion for nearly 4 years when you shouldn't have been in the first place. He says, do you want to stay in the Navy or do you want to go back to the Legion? And I said, well, look, I said, I've only got a year and a bit to do left in the Legion. I'd rather go back and do my time.
What did he say to that?
He said, well, fair enough. He says, you can go back to the Legion. He says, but if you want to come back to the Navy and leave the Legion, you've got my recommendation to come back in. I have to come back in the Navy.
Good gracious.
So I says, right, fine. And I went back over to the Nick to get my kit together. Oh, and also, he didn't actually discharge me. I had to come back and get my kit together. I stayed another night in the Nick. And then the next morning, a bloke coming around in the van to collect this. Normally it was two naval patrol members would come round, but this time it was just one bloke by himself. And I recognised him. He was on one of the ships I was on in the Norfolk. I said, what's going on then? I says, normally they have two naval patrol blocks. And he goes, nah, he says, take it from me. He says, you're getting discharged. And I went, I was there for about 5 minutes, discharged sure. Mm. And I got my documents. Now, Royal Naval documents, you've got a blue corner, blue triangle in one of the corners. And it actually says, this corner is to be removed if the man is disgraced from Her Majesty's Forces. And mine's still on there. Mm. And the period that's marked desertion, because the actual form is like material type stuff. And all I've done is... like a pitch stick, glued this extra strip across the desertion period. And I was even told by the officer, he says, as you can see, if you feel you want to, it'll come off quite easy. You're going to throw it away.
Really?
Yeah, and I've still got the docs in the house as well.
Really?
So I could take it off any time I want if I wanted to.
Really? That's quite incredible.
It is.
Well, but you didn't feel like going back?
No, I was determined to finish my time in the Legion right. By this stage.
Had you been interrupted on leave?
No.
You hadn't overstayed on leave with the Legion?
No. I was out in time. I got back on time from the Legion.
So where did you stay after you'd been let out of the Navy?
I was at my brother's house in Gosport. And I had to go back the following... Once I was let out, I had to go back the following day. But they said, you can come in whenever you want. And it was to do a final medical for leaving the Navy. And then they actually gave me a cheque for £404.
Back pay.
I don't know what it was for, but they gave us a cheque for £404.
Really?
And then I was told my pension from the Navy would be £108 a year from age of 65, and I'd have to claim that myself, which wasn't a great deal of money.
But they thought of you.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I finished my time, went back there, finished my leave, and I went back over.
Did you feel better you got that cleared up?
I did, yeah, because I got my discharge notice from the Navy. Yeah. So when I finished, I went back to France. Now, what they'd done is, they'd already told me in the Nick, in Portsmouth, they'd been at the French Embassy, and told them that I was there. So the French Embassy had phoned up the rep, and they said, oh, Ferguson's not here anymore. He went to the Trez. He's in Djibouti. And then somebody must have said, oh, wait a minute, he should be back by now. Phone up Auban, the Legion headquarters in Auban. So when the French Embassy phoned up there, they said, oh, Ferguson, yes, he's on leave, he's in Lyon in France. No, he's not, he's in the Nick in Portsmouth, in England.
Oh, when you got back eventually, did they punish you for...
No, I went to the... all the blokes come out of leave, and we had to go to this office, and that was to tell which regiments I was going to go to. And a chief corporal came out, and he says, who's Ferguson? And I says, I am. And he says, end of the corridor, second door on the right, Gestapo won't have a chat with you. And I was thinking, oh, God, and I was walking around the corridor, And I was thinking, I'll just deny all knowledge. I'll say, I don't know what they're talking about, or I'll pretend I can't speak French. So I get down there, knocks on the door, and there's a chief sergeant, who was a big lad he was, and there was an adjutant. He was Pakistani, big, huge, massive thing he was. And both of them at the same time, they said, come on in, sit down, in English. So I thought, well, there goes one of my chances of getting out of it. So the chief sergeant says, right, what happened? And I told him, I says, well, look, I says, my brother phoned us. I phoned my brother up. He says, if you come back to England, give yourself up. You'll only be in Nick for 2 days. And then you'll be discharged. So they said, right, what happened then? I said, well, I got put in the Nick. I was there for a week. And I got discharged from the Navy. And he says, have you got the paperwork? And I says, it's in my room. He says, go and get your discharge papers. So when I went up the room, I came back. I says, there you are. And he says, right, the next time you decide to go to England when you shouldn't be there, if you get pulled in by the Navy by somebody who doesn't realise you've been discharged, phone us up, we'll get the sent across, and we'll get you out the Nick. And I thought, well, yeah, I can't complain about that. He says, right, now get out of the office and send them two in out there. And those two blokes went outside in the corridor, and they laid back off leave. So I walked out all smiles and happy, and I says, in you go, lads, this is the one I was chatting with you. And as I was closing the door, I could hear the oof, 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 as the fist started listening to the
No,
fist.
Really?
But I went in there, and I went to get my new regiment, see what I was going to do. And the sergeant, like this 002, started giving us a hard time, saying, what were you doing in England? Telling everybody it was shit in the Legion, were you? And I says, well, if I thought it was shit, I wouldn't be back here now, would I? And he went, oh, all right, then, fine. He goes, where do you want to go to? So I says, I want to go to the 6th Engineer Regiment. And he goes, all right, you're leaving in 2 days.
What about Chad? When was that?
That was with my time with the engineers.
Right. So which year did you join the Legion? Or did you join the Reg?
I joined that in 87. Okay. July 87, I come back off leave. Okay.
And that's based in near Orange at Loudun?
It's Loudun. Or it's in between Loudun and Loudois.
Okay.
The nearest place, big place is Bagnols, and then you got Avignon.
Okay, yeah. And what was it like that?
I got there, I was there for 11 days. Then they sent us on leave, because the company was actually in Chad.
Yeah.
And because I'd done rear party for 11 days, I was entitled to leave. Mm. So I got sent on leave for another 15 days back to England again. But this time I actually phoned up Oban to the Gestapo and told them I was going on leave to England. And they said, give her a ring when you get back. Mm. So I did that as well. And
what else happened on that leave then?
Not a great deal, really. Mm. I met the wife there.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I met her in the June. And she came at the Portsmouth in July before I got before I went back to France. And I came back in the August. And we got engaged in the August.
And then what did they make about you being in the Legion and all the rest of it then?
Oh, I'd actually met two lads from Hetton Lee Hall, where the wife comes from. And they was over.
They come from where?
Hetton Lee Hall.
Where's that near?
It's near Durham.
Okay.
And they'd actually read about the Cameron Parade in the Soldier of Fortune magazine. So they wrote away asking for two tickets. And that's where I actually met these two. And I said, well, when I'm on leave, I'll come up and stay with you, have a visit. And they thought that was it. They wouldn't see us again. But I gave one of them a ring, and I said, right, I'm coming up on Monday. And I went up there for a week intentionally, and I ended up staying there 2 weeks.
Do you marry one of their sisters now?
No, it was just like the last one I met when I was up there. But like all the families know each other. So
I see, okay, so it's a friend of a friend in there. Yeah. Okay, right. And so then tell me about Chad.
Then I went to the Reg, come back off leave again, went back to the Reg. And then we did, this is August, October, we had an engineering course, lasted 22 days. So a crash course in mine clearance. Then at the beginning of November, we flew to Chad for a 4 month tour out there clearing minefields.
Good, you only had how long?
Well, 22 days. But wasn't even that really, because we had other things like bridge building and whatever. Right.
How confident do you feel about that?
At the time, I mean, more. I think everybody was trying to put on a brave face, making out they weren't bothered about it. But I saw on the first day I was in there, like, and I dug the first mine up, or my first mine up, and I shouted out, "Mean!" And it was a case of, right, dig it out. And I thought, hang about, aren't you going to do it? And the sergeant says, dig it out. So I cleared it all out, cleared all the mine away. He says, right, I clear the top off. So he just blew all the sand off it. So I blew it all away, and I took the top off, got the detonator out. He goes, okay. He says, right, stand back. So we tied a bit of rope around it. Everybody got out the area, and then we pull the mine clear out the ground. And there was no big bang, so it wasn't booby-trapped. Mm. And after that, you get confidence and sort of...
How many mines do you reckon you cleared in the end? Or?
What, everybody total?
No, you, yourself.
Me, myself. I would say a couple of hundred easy.
Really?
Because sometimes, you see, you had these little bits of bait. There'd be piles of mines, they'd be expected to walk across there just to go and grab them all. And you'd have like a small minefield in between. So you had to try and keep together a reasonable bit of patience to try and clear the area until you finally got
what sort of mines were they?
We had a Belgian, Yugoslavian, Italian was the main ones we found.
Which were the most difficult to deal with?
The Yugoslavian.
Why was that?
You had a tilt on the top of it, like a pad, so if you touched it, the blast would come in that direction of where the tilt was. And these were deadly, these things were. We actually had one lad stood on a Belgian anti-personnel mine. See, by this time everybody was getting cocky. A lot of people were under the, you know, thinking these things don't even work. I mean, we've dug that many of them, and we've actually thrown them out the way once, you know, you're getting that bored of them, throwing them around.
Were they all primed, so?
Oh, yeah, they're all...
They all had been laid correctly.
Yeah. And we were getting to a stage where I think they don't even work properly, until one day one of the lads stood on one and blew off his foot off. And that was it, sort of slowed down a bit then.
What nationality was he?
He was Belgian.
Hmm.
His name was Reba. They actually did an operation to try to give him a false foot. But they cocked up the operation. And he ended up actually losing the whole of his foot.
Were you there when that happened?
I was right behind him in the minefield. What we'd do is you'd have a 40 minutes clear in the minefield, 40 minutes rest period, and then it'd be 40 minutes you'd be getting rocks. And you'd take them into the minefield and you'd put them down where the mines were and paint the top of them. And this was so you could mark them on your maps where the minefields had been taken up. And I was right behind him. And it wasn't even a loud bang, it was like a small muffled blast and a big cloud of black smoke.
And he went up in the air, did he? Or?
No, he just fell backwards.
Yeah. And he stunned? Or?
He had the mine clearance trousers, the proper jacket and trousers, and they were burst open. It's like a flak jacket type.
Flak jacket.
The trousers are the same stuff.
Yeah.
And the blast went up there, ripped open it, and he had a cut up his face. Mm. And he was lying on the ground. Now, we was looking at a medical officer there with me. And he injected him with morphine within, you know, minutes of it happening. And I was one of the first ones there, because I was right behind. And Rebo was lying there saying, it hurts. And I was thinking, I'm not surprised, like, half your foot's gone there, mate. But I didn't say nothing to him. And there was an English...
Sorry?
I didn't actually say nothing to him at the
time.
No. But there was an English sergeant there as well. And his name was Mitchell, an English sergeant. And I was there, Mitch was there, and Becky was another sergeant. He was actually beside Rebo at the time of the blast. And then they injected Reba with the morphine. And by this time, they're clearing everybody else out of the minefield. But I was still up there with Mitch. And after a couple of minutes, Reba was away with the cuckoos, with this morphine going through his system. And the helicopter came in. And Reba was lying there saying, what's that? And the captain says, it's all right, Reba. You're going in the helicopter. And Reba says, helicopter? Ooh!
No.
But by this time, the morphine had took over him, so he was past caring about his foot. And that's all he could say, helicopter, ooh. So me and Mitch burst out laughing and was told to get at the minefield with the rest of them. I actually passed one of his toes about 50 yards further down from the blast.
Really?
As I was leaving the minefield, one of his toes was lying there. And that was that had been in the December of 87.
Well, that calmed everybody down.
They gave me the day off for that one, for the rest of the day for minefield clearance. And then we changed.
So what was it in the next morning? Everybody was a bit
nervous, but we're clear this. We've got it over and done with.
Were many civilians being killed by, injured by all these mines? They're anti-personnel, not anti-armour mines.
They're anti-tank and anti-personnel mines.
Oh, all right.
Right, now, what we used to do was every day we'd have one legionnaire, one corporal, one sergeant. And we used to have a siesta in the afternoon. And virtually every day you'd have one of the locals would come up and say, I found a new minefield. And all I wanted was a ride in your truck. So you had to get, the three of us had to get in the truck with this local, drive out to where he said he'd seen the minefield, and go and have a check at it, do a recce on it, and make sure there's mines.
And who was laying the mines, the Chadians? Or
it was the Libyans at this time, but the Libyans had left behind them.
Yeah, and they didn't have any Soviet or East Bloc mines apart from those Yugoslav ones?
Yugoslav ones were the only ones that we dug up at that time.
Yeah, right. And did you see much action out there? I mean, apart from that, any fighting or punch, or, you know, shooting?
And no, the only shooting we ever heard was New Year's Eve. That was with the locals letting off the rifles all over the place.
Right. Do you have much to do with the local population there?
Not a great deal.
No. What did you make of the French local population? I mean, the French population in France or in Corsica or wherever it was?
A lot of them didn't want nothing to do with you, really.
Why? Because you're a legionnaire.
Yeah. I actually seen a video one time and they had this interviewing people in Marseille. I was at a market and they said to one woman, like, what do you think of the Legion? And her reaction was, mais ils sont tous les salauds, or they're all bastards.
Yeah.
And we were in fits of laughter when we heard that one. But I mean, some of them will chat with you, a lot of them don't want nothing to do with you.
Mm. Right. But I mean, apart from being a legionnaire, I mean, what objectively did you make of the French from closer, you know, closer quarters than most people get to them?
Oh, I think they're a bunch of arrogant swines myself. I didn't like them at all.
Yeah. What exceptions?
People have said to me, like, you know, France, come up to France and all this. And I said, what do I want to go there for?
Mm.
I don't like the place, I don't like the people, I don't like the food.
What about the way of life?
Oh, I don't really like the way of life, really. I mean, I said to a French guy, you know, these French houses all have shutters on the outside. And they've all got the shutters closed, even during the daytime. I said, why don't they ever open the shutters and let some fresh air in the house? And he says, well, it ruins the furniture because the sun fades the material. I thought I'd rather have faded material than live like a mole for the rest of my life.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's actually the way they
do it. You don't like the food, or?
No, I didn't like the food either.
What didn't you like about it?
I'm not too keen on garlic anyway.
Yeah.
And I think most of the French food that they put out has got garlic.